The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. I like to speak from the microphone so it sounds like the voice of God. Good evening, everybody. My name is Hadar Harris. I'm the executive director of the Center for Human Rights and Humanitarian Law. I had to remember for a second which center I was the executive director of. We're happy to see all of you here. We're happy to have this, our second installment of our four-session human rights film series. This film series is in its sixth year, and we're in a very fruitful collaboration with the Center for Social Media on main campus. There are a variety of other co-sponsors of this film series, a variety of centers and programs from main campus that is too numerous for me to list. But we do want to acknowledge the tremendous collaboration and cooperation that we have had over the years with the Center for Social Media. The films screen tonight, Wednesday nights, here at WCL, and tomorrow evening over on main campus in the Wexler Theater. So if you like it really a lot tonight, you can go tomorrow night as well. One of the main things that we do with the film series is that the focus of the film series itself is really to focus on how media can be used to promote and to protect human rights. This evening's movie is a clear tribute to that. I'm not going to introduce the movie more than just to say that, because we like to let the movie speak for itself. Following the screening, we'll be joined by Professor Julie Mertes, who teaches in the School for International Service and has done a great deal of work in the Balkans, working both on issues of justice and reconciliation. And she'll speak for about 10 minutes, and then we'll open up to a brief discussion. I understand that last week, how many of you were here last week? So I understand we had quite a filled house, a packed house, and a rich discussion that ran into the wee hours. So I have set my VCR for lost tonight, so if we decide to go past 9 o'clock, that's okay. I want to also just bring to your attention a few upcoming events that those of you who joined us for coffee hour this morning and who joined us this afternoon for our lunchtime session with our Indian delegation have already heard twice today, so you should make these announcements. Tomorrow afternoon in this room, one of the reasons that so many chairs are set up is because we will be hosting Judge Juan Guzman, who was a judge in Chile, just recently retired, who has attempted to prosecute General Pinochet for the crimes that he committed against the regime and the people of Chile. He will be here at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon in this very room, room 603, and there'll be a reception that will follow that. It's a wonderful opportunity to hear about his efforts, both individually and as part of the judiciary in Chile, to fight against the impunity of the Pinochet regime. On Monday, October 24th, this coming Monday, Justice Richard Goldstone, who is a preeminent scholar, thinker, judge, from the South African Constitutional Court, will be here to talk about his perspectives on economic, social, and cultural rights. The South African Constitution, as you may or may not know, has actually written in basic economic, social, and cultural rights in a really revolutionary way, and the High Court of South Africa has been among the real leaders in pushing forward an agenda promoting economic, social, and cultural rights. He will be here again in this room, room 603, at 12 o'clock noon. We'll be having a nice lunch, not pizza, and I encourage you to come and to bring others with you to join us Monday at 12 o'clock. Professors Herman Schwartz and Rick Wilson will also be discussants for that talk. It begins a series of events that we'll be holding through the course of the year on differing perspectives on economic, social, and cultural rights. In early spring, we'll be welcoming Arye Nair, who's the president of the Open Society Institute, as well as a former executive director and founding executive director of Human Rights Watch and also of the ACLU, who will be talking about his perspective that there is no such thing as economic, social, and cultural rights. Those are just a few brief announcements. You're also getting a copy of the Human Rights Defenders Speaker Series fall program, which we'll be jumping off with next Tuesday at 5 o'clock when we will be welcoming a leader in the women's rights movement of Bahrain who will speak about why, as all of the speakers in this series will, talk about why she does the work that she does at considerable personal risk to herself, but doing groundbreaking and extremely important work in Bahrain. That event will be held in the student lounge here on the sixth floor behind the cafeteria at 5 o'clock on Tuesday. So we will keep you busy this week, very, very busy this week. And to cap it off, obviously, next week and for the next 2 weeks, we'll be having the final three films in this year's film series. Next Wednesday, just mark on your calendars that we'll be screening sometimes in April, which is a film about the Rwandan genocide. We will be joined before the screening next week by the ambassador of Rwanda to the United States, Ambassador Zach Nsenga, who will speak for a few minutes about post-genocide Rwanda, and then we'll be screening the film. So I hope very much that you'll be able to join us for these and many more events. If you're not already on the center's listserv, sign up for that. You get one email per week that gives you a full overview of all the different events that are going on. And with that, we're going to start the film. And so we look forward to an interesting discussion with Professor Murtis afterwards. Thanks.
Sure, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Julie Murtis. I teach in the School of International Service, and I've done a lot of work on human rights in Bosnia. But we're not talking about me, we're talking about the film. What does this have to do with human rights? What does it have to do with human rights? Human rights narratives, you're told in law school, are about remembering the facts. Oh, so you can't hear me. They're about remembering the facts so you can match them against the law. Human rights remembering you're taught in law school. It's about remembering the facts so that you can bring perpetrators to justice and you can do right for victims. Now, human rights narratives are good for all this, but I think this film, these video letters, shows that human rights narratives are worth so much more for survivors and victims and bystanders. I just want to make three short points and just to help to lead discussion. First, everyone has a story. And that's something that's frequently lost when you're just looking at victim perpetrators in law in a very sterile way. But everyone has a story, and especially we see from this, people who are casual bystanders need to tell people what they were doing. I didn't see you. That's why I didn't say hello to you. He really needs to say that. So everyone has a story. Secondly, everyone has different degrees of openness to remembering and different reasons for doing so. For some people, it means creating an account of the past that makes sense. For others, it means rewriting history to make the present, the difficult present, a little easier. For others, it's about developing a personal narrative to deal with your identity or a new identity. We've learned from survivors of the Holocaust that second and third generations of survivors have something that's been called post-memory, attached not to an event, but to images and stories, mediated not through recollection, but through projection and invention. That's true, and there'll be second and third generations here as well. But for first generations, there's an immediate nature to remembering, which brings me to my third point, and that is something that I think is so brilliantly illustrated by these videos, and I think it's why these videos are so popular all throughout the former Yugoslavia. And that is, remembering and telling human rights stories can be a way of connecting with relationships and reconnecting and creating a new narrative to help you live on with that relationship, or some kind of narrative that will help you have closure with that relationship. And it wasn't clear whether all these stories would be fairy tales. And maybe these families and individuals would see each other again and maybe not. But the connection was what mattered. So for that reason, I think primarily that reason, these videos have been shown on public TV throughout what's equivalent of something like public TV throughout the former Yugoslavia. There are different sites, 60 different sites, or more than 60 sites now, where people can go and make video letters. I don't know if you tried the website, but you can log on and make a video letter and try to find somebody, or reach somebody, or respond to somebody. This began, the first video you saw was made 5 years ago, and it did not air until publicly throughout Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia, until April of this year. And it's just very, very popular. And I don't know anything about your backgrounds, but I would guess that a lot of you come from different places or have parents who have come from different places, and this might speak to you for the different reasons why we have human rights narratives and why it's so powerful. But your reactions, that's just what I felt when I was watching this. Anybody? You can always Google it. But what they would do is they would show up and they had a van that said, like, they had cows on the van and video letters, and they brought along a band to play music, which I think is great, you know, so they draw attention to themselves. And people would be like, you? Who are you? Video letters? And you could tell from the film, people had no idea what they were doing. Went, you know, what message are you bringing me? What is this? Is this good? Who are you? And they came back with the finished product, and they were extremely well received later.
I think it's sort of anguishing to see how innocent people can feel guilty, how the Croat Serb family didn't know how the others were going to feel about each other, and the two friends at the beginning were so anguished about how their good friendship could have been destroyed by the other people feeling that they were guilty.
Right. Well, and what mattered was not really guilt or innocence. What mattered is that they cared about each other. You know, and they didn't contact each other because it would be more devastating to know that the person didn't want to talk to them. So they had this belief that they would just say, oh, I have my... And I spent a lot of time in the former Yugoslavia lived there for a couple of years in the mid-90s, and it was true. People would say, oh, yes, I still have friends in Zagreb. They live in Belgrade. Have you contacted them? Oh, no, we can't contact them. Well, you know, here's my cell phone. Here's my, you know, whatever, satellite dish phone. Do you want to contact them? Oh, no, I can't. Because it's better for them not to. You know, and a lot of it is fear. Fear for that's legitimate. But you don't get into judging whether it's legitimate or not. If people are afraid and they think they can't do something, then they can't do it. So, another comment? Yeah.
I wanted to speak to your point on connection. In terms of time and
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. Seeing this reminded me of being in Beijing in 1995 at the World Conference on Women with women from all over former Yugoslavia, and we would meet every night in a restaurant, the same restaurant, and it just kept on going, spiraling, and it was a very safe place, and people who hadn't talked to each other in years were singing and talking about how they used to be in camp together and had the best passport in the world and sang Beatles songs on the beach and it was a very safe place, and the owners of the restaurant called it Yugoslavia. They put up a little sign for former Yugoslavia because you want to be Yugoslav now, nostalgic. But it was definitely about connections that were like grabbing at something to steady yourself when everything is rushing by you. Are you stretching or? I wanted to commend the organizers of the Human Rights Film Festival this year because I think they picked really interesting films that push us to think about human rights in personal ways and in different ways. And I really appreciate you coming. So thank you.